Gleich geht's los mit dem On the Way to New York Podcast. Kurzen Moment Geduld, hier kommt die ganz kurze Werbeunterbrechung und hier kommt ein praktisches Tool als Werbepartner, nämlich GoDaddy.de, also die Firma GoDaddy, habt ihr bestimmt schon mal gehört, seit wirklich sehr vielen Jahren eine der Top-Adressen, um Webseiten anzulegen, also nicht nur Adressen zu registrieren, sondern auch eine Homepage anzulegen und auch die richtigen Tools, um das Ganze im Online-Marketing an den Mann oder die Frau zu bringen. Also ihr geht auf godaddy.de/newwork. Dort bekommt ihr eine eigene Website für 30 Tage völlig kostenfrei oder, haltet euch fest, für 99 Cent, das ist wirklich günstig, könnt ihr euch eine .com-Adresse oder auch eine .de-Adresse für das ganze Jahr holen. Das ist wirklich cool, weil jeder, der ein Nebengewerbe betreibt, was sehr viele von uns tun, die eben auch New Work leben, die brauchen immer noch heute natürlich eine Website. Wir haben auch eine eigene. Man ist wirklich schnell fertig, kann schauen, welche Adressen noch frei sind und findet dann eben auch die richtigen Tools bei GoDaddy, um das Ganze eben im Online-Marketing zu vermarkten. Also jetzt auf godaddy.de/newwork gehen. Das ist die Adresse, unter der ihr das Ganze finden könnt. Herzlich willkommen zum On the Way to New Work Podcast. Heute nur mit Christoph Magnussen und wir haben ein Takeover. And I will switch to English now because we have an English speaking guest with us. And the takeover is done by a good friend from Michael, Max Giordano, who's sitting next to me. We're in Berlin and you know each other from the creative scene.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Michael is an agency legend, so you can't avoid him.
Okay. And Max actually introduced us to a guest you guys most likely know. It's the author of the book Working Out Loud, John Stepper, sitting here next to us.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We just met during breakfast now and we took the time to record a podcast.
Yeah, this is it's already been a very different kind of morning. Just as we're in this beautiful Berlin space, it has a startup vibe and it's fundamentally different from where I live and work in New York City. But great. I love Berlin.
So good to meet you. So for the people who don't know you, and Michael is much better than I in this, I always say 2-3 sentences about yourself. And he's like, what are you saying? Like 20-30 sentences, give it to us. So who are you and how did you become the person who you are today?
Well, I grew up in New York City and my whole life, really, I did what people did, which is you went to work, got a job, worked in big companies my whole life. And it was really late in midlife that, boy, there has to be something more than this. And I went on a search for how to realize that something more. And not just how I could realize it, but how I could help the other people around me who really weren't getting as much as they could from the places that we worked, from the lives that we led. And that's what led me to work on a method or approach that anyone could experience a bit more from work and life. And that's Working Out Loud.
But where did you work before? Like if I would have met the John 10 years ago.
It was, I studied computer science. I worked at Deutsche Bank for a long time. Before then, I worked in investment banks and technology. Before then, at Bell Labs, if you're familiar with them.
Very influential on innovation, actually.
They were. It was a bit, though, of a random walk. So this, we talked earlier about you seeking purpose in what you do and following what you find kind of intrinsically interesting or fulfilling. I did not do that. I grew up in the Bronx, lower middle class parents, and you got a job. And if they paid you, that was the trade. You did whatever needed to be done in order to earn a living. And I kind of, like many people, I think, did that unthinkingly for the next 30 years. And now, in my 50s, I've got a startup and I'm in a place like this and it feels very foreign, but it also feels very good.
Which is a good thing. I mean, something good emerged from that. And I know how hard it is to write a book. We tried it for the last 2 years and it's work in progress. So what brought you to that moment that you said, I sit down, I have a method, and you can also explain what it is, because maybe there are some people who
don't know what working out loud is, although a lot of people in the new work area have heard it. But
So I'll start first with what the motivation was, which was there was a reorganization in my company. I had been doing reasonably well career-wise until I wasn't. And my boss says, you know, we're reorganizing and your job, someone else has now, you have to do something else. And oh, by the way, if you could find a job in the next 60 days, you could keep working here. And I realized I was playing a kind of career roulette, right? Like hoping for a good project, good boss. And that didn't just affect my pay and the work that I did. It affected my identity. It affected my family. And I looked for a way that I could determine things more myself. Maybe not control everything, but even at the place that I worked, could I just tilt the odds in my favor? And that's what led to using tools to do that. So the first it was about enterprise social networks and ways that I could control my reputation, not just the performance review, but make your work visible so that your work spoke for you. The public feedback on that work was out there. And now it's not just one person in a room with a spreadsheet saying good or bad, but you shaped your reputation. And then what I experienced was the act of doing that. It wasn't self-promotion. It was a way really to have a voice, to contribute, which felt good in and of itself. But like a pebble in the pond, each time you did that, oh, here's what I learned, here's what I'm working on, here's some resource that's been helpful. Making work visible, working out loud. That brought me into contact with other people and other possibilities in a big company that I never would have found otherwise. So that triggered him. I said, this is big, right? Like if I could do this, it will change everything. And so we introduced an enterprise social network at Deutsche Bank, and gradually we got adoption, but it didn't really change as much as I thought. Because, of course, the tools aren't enough. People were busy. They needed to experience this better way of working, this more open, more generous way of working that could help them as individuals and also be good for the company. And that's what led me to want to write a book and say, okay, here's an approach. Here's a way to do that. Books don't change people, at least in most books. So that led me to develop something that people could do on their own, and that's a peer support method. So working out loud has become a method for building relationships with people that could help you in some way, help you achieve a goal, explore a topic, explore possibilities. And that method, which is free on the internet, that method has wound up spreading. So now it's in, there are circles in 57 countries and 9 languages. Because when it works, it helps people experience that, you know, I have a voice. I have something to contribute. I can experience this, what we're doing right now, this kind of give and take in a psychologically safe space, at first in the small, in a peer support group, 4 or 5 people, but then over the course of your network, inside and outside your company. And that's where the magic happens. It's very human, it's not just about tools, but if there's something new, it's that we've given people a chance to experience it for themselves over time till they develop a set of habits and a mindset that sticks.
So what is the method in a nutshell?
You
described the circle. So it's like 4 or 5 people form a circle. It's grassroots. So no one forces them, right?
Right. And I wanted it so that anybody could do it. We don't have to wait for permission or budget or the boss. So it is a peer support method. 4 or 5 people form a group. They meet for an hour a week for 12 weeks. And there are simple guides. It's a guided mastery program. So simple guides that give you exercises to do over the 12 weeks that build on each other. And in a circle, 3 questions that you ask yourself. 1, what is it that I'm trying to accomplish? So this isn't a support group. It's not just chatting. This is something that you want to do, something you want to learn more about, explore, meet more people who do what you do or do what you'd like to do. Who can help you with that goal? So who are people that might have knowledge, experience, resources that could help you in some way? And then three, this is the thing you practice over the 12 weeks. What is it that I have to contribute to these people that might deepen our relationship? And for most people, they think very narrowly about that last part. Right? Like, here's my PhD thesis. Here's the finished product. But what we help people tap into is you've got a wide, wide range of things from what we're doing right now, offering each other attention, appreciation. But it also includes your visible work, what you're doing, why, what you're learning, what's been useful, framed as a contribution to others that might be helpful. And then over the course of your network, that will lead to deeper relationships with some of them, a greater sense of trust, relatedness, and that leads to greater chance for cooperation, collaboration. So you're not doing it to network in a traditional sense or to get something. You can lead with generosity in a way that helps you and also deepens relationships with a greater range of people.
Mm-hmm. So say, because we're missing Michael today, say he would be with us in the room, the four of us could start a circle. You're in New York, Michael and Christopher are in Hamburg, I'm in Berlin, so we would...
Thank you for being practical, yes.
Yeah, form this circle, and then the goals, I just want to be clear, they could be either personal, individual, they could be like work-related, like I want to understand OKRs and implement it in my daily life, I want to be more agile,
right.
I want to practice meditation, so it could be any kind of goal.
That's true. So how it happens is that because the material's online for free, and probably Bosch is a good example. One woman at Bosch, out of the 400,000, says, I'd like to try it. So she downloads the guide, she finds four other people, they form a circle. And in their first week, they each pick an individual goal. It's usually something that they're looking to do more of or learn more about. If there are five people, there are five individual goals. And then over time, they practice together. So that circle might be their first psychologically safe space at work. Right? It's a diverse group of people. They probably don't know each other. But they're experiencing this very human give and take that leads to trust, cooperation, and collaboration. And then over the 12 weeks, they experience that with people outside of the circle in their network, inside and outside the company, sometimes using tools to find and engage them, sometimes using traditional methods, email, coffee. But by the end, they all have a bigger network. They've got better communication skills. Wherever they are with digital tools, they're a bit more comfortable. And they have a sense of empowerment, of self-determination that we typically don't foster inside big companies.
Max, you were mentioning during the breakfast the entrepreneurs organization cycles, and I know them, like the forum, and there's a method behind it, but I can see also how different it is because you're in a work environment, so you definitely have to like this space in the company, you want to like achieve something. But what I really like is when you said, we can give each other awareness, like we listen to each other, and a safe space. And I can feel how powerful that is, because in many corporations, you don't have that. We met companies in New York. My wife talked to VaynerMedia. They have a chief of heart officer, Claude Silver. She has the task to meet every person in the company. And they are, I think, close to 1,000 people. And some people say this is nuts, but the only thing she does is give them space to talk, a safe space.
Right.
Extremely powerful.
It is. And yet, if that's all I did, people are very busy. Mm-hmm. So as much as they want that, I felt this could be more than just support or therapy. Right? I wanted to help people tap into their intrinsic need for connection, but also purpose. Also competence or a sense of progress. So it starts with, what is it I'm trying to do? So something as mundane as your example of, I want to learn more about OKRs, right? Some technique, right? It could be anything. Okay, how would you do that? Well, GM, I'm going to start to use the internet and internet to find people who've already done it or who've written or spoken about it. Now what do I do? Well, I'm going to look for ways that I could contribute to them, starting with these very basics of, gee, I might follow you online, which just signals I see you and care what you have to say. And now you may have seen my name. Maybe you've written something and I'll dare to post a short comment saying, like, this is really useful. Thanks very much. It takes you 20 seconds. That's where you start in the early weeks. So those are easy contributions to make, but we don't stop there. Over time, you learn, well, how would I share a resource? How would I be visible? How would I frame my work as a contribution so it doesn't seem like self-promotion, but it might actually help somebody else, and in the process of doing so, build trust? Those are learnable skills. So just thrusting tools at people or telling them to cross silos, like, that's not cutting it. We have to give them a practical experience where they can experiment in a safe space until it becomes a habit. And then they could apply to any goal.
How did you nicely wrap it up? So what the experience is, I see you, I...
In the Culture Code, great book by Dan Coyle, he talked about what makes for good cultures. And the first thing, a large chunk of the book, is about belonging and our deeply embedded need for that, and how there are these belonging cues, these signals that say, I see you, meaning I recognize you, you are somebody. I care about you, care about what you have to say, care about what you do, and we have a shared future together. Now, if you're in an organization, you're at Siemens or Daimler, this might seem a little touchy-feely, right? But it's actually why you have recognition programs at work. Mm. It's why we're, one of the examples we gave out this morning was at a factory in Nuremberg. And even in a factory doing very different kinds of work, people are people. And they want to contribute, they want to be respected, they want to be listened to. And if we could help them experience that, whether you're in a factory or you're in a corporate headquarters, in a way that feels purposeful, in a way that feels genuine, in a way that feels human, then a little magic happens. You lean in, right? You are more likely to do more at work, to reach out across silos, et cetera. All the behaviors we talked about for 30 years, you're more likely to do that when we tap into this human thing that goes on.
So is this, we're talking about purpose as well. Is it also something that helps people to find out over the process, over the course, what they really want and what they really would love to do? So are there also people who then say after a while, well, I don't see that purpose in this company, in this organization for myself, or is it something that is always connected to the company?
It's the former. So for most of us, and I think the three of us are probably examples of this, I could just be in my track at Deutsche Bank, in which case there is one path, right? I have to wait for my boss to win the lottery or get hit by a bus. And hopefully the first one. And that's it. Like, here's this big, beautiful company, right? 100,000 people, tons of locations, jobs, things that I don't even know exist. But nope, I've got these little blinders on that say there's one road to success. And by the way, it may be a road that I don't even want or like when I get there. So what you can experience in a circle is learning from other people, what we call a purposeful discovery, what else is out there, what their experiences are like. And so very often over the course of the circle, you may pick a goal, maybe I want to do more with digital media, let's say. So I learn from people like you, you're on my relationship list. I start to follow you, we start to interact, but then I realize what your day is like, what's really involved in it. I say, you know, that's great, it's not for me. And I take another turn. And I've, instead of some big leap to some other greener grass, I've experienced that through relationship. It didn't cost me anything, And this idea that I can, it's almost like lean startup for an individual. This idea that you can experiment, put an idea out there, get feedback, and then adapt and adjust is super powerful when it comes to making decisions for career or life. And people will often use their circle for that, to discover in some purposeful way what might be more suitable for them, inside or outside the company.
Maybe let's try to find out the secret sauce of the success, because I think we can really say it's a success. I mean, you mentioned briefly it's in many countries, many languages, and there is some iconic companies working with it. And because it's grassroots, there must be something behind it, because it was not forced from top management. Like, you know, top management didn't say, oh, we have to implement Working Out Loud. The organization created these circles. Bosch, you mentioned Bosch, Siemens, Daimler, like it's a whole list. So what is the secret sauce a bit behind that?
I think you're right. It spreads by word of mouth, right? So I don't buy ads or sell things. It's free on the internet. So it's very much a viral kind of spread. There's a beautiful quote from Toni Morrison who says, you know, they won't remember what you did or what you said. They'll remember how you made them feel. And when a circle works, and they don't work every time, there's no magic pill. When it works, people feel something. And it's back to those intrinsic motivators. This need for self-determination, control, competence, connection. Man, if I can tap into those, it's like you light the spark. You light the pilot light of that person. They're alive again. And once they feel that, they want to spread it. They want to tell their friends because, hey, I did this thing. Just imagine you have a new diet or exercise program and you feel great. What happens? You talk about it to your other people because you want them to feel great too. That's what happens. In some cases, people will then take it inside their company. So I don't approach the head of HR. How could I? I'm one person. Why would they even see me? People instead, they tell their friends, they spread a few more circles, a grassroots movement forms, and then the feedback from people inside the company is what makes it easier to get permission for it to spread further. So that's why it's that feeling that fuels the word of mouth.
Like, is there something tool-wise that helps? You mentioned enterprise social networks in the beginning to like make it visible. Is it easier these days with all the new tools to like get that done? I'm aware that it's not the tool, it's always the people behind the tool who use it, but also large corporates are changing into like more collaborative work tools and make work seen. So is there something that really helped to set it off once you say, okay, we got to get it going, but we should change something on the tool side before we do that, from your experience?
Tools help. So they, particularly the social platforms, they amplify who you are and what you do. I mean, I'm talking to the choir. but I didn't want to have to wait for the project or for the change program, or for management, or a new org structure. I wanted people to experience it wherever they were. So if your company doesn't have, or maybe you don't work in a company, maybe you're by yourself, then what? Or maybe you just have 15 people, or maybe you're in a factory, then what? So as much as they help, I wanted people to be able to experience this human give and take first. So that's what happens in a circle. And then the tools, I think of them as options or ways to further extend their reach, expand the set of contributions they could make and how they might offer them. So if you're in that factory, are you blogging about the latest project and what you learned? No, but that's okay. What might happen, and this is what's happening in Nuremberg, is your first step is, look, that person in the other department who I thought was kind of the enemy because we had a problem at the work. Now I know them. And we've increased the chances that we can talk through a problem that makes the work better. Now in a second circle or third, maybe they'll be more likely to use Bosch Connect or the social intranet and not just rely on that small circle as a safe space, but look for somebody else in another factory who solved that problem. And that's how we gradually open people up. But the key is, and you'll recognize this phrase, start where you are. So I'm not imposing one way for people or one final solution. Wherever you happen to be, I just hope to open you up a bit more, that you're more curious to look for what else is out there, who and what, and you're more open to offering things that you have and seeing that in a very, very expansive kind of way, again, from attention to visible work.
Hier kommt die ganz kurze Werbeunterbrechung. Gleich geht's weiter mit dem On the Way to New Work Podcast. Und ich sage immer, dass diese Werbeunterbrechung kurz ist. Aber ich will mir ja auch Zeit lassen für unsere Werbepartner. Die machen ja den ganzen Spaß hier erst möglich. Also, diese Werbepause ist das der Spiegel, ganz konkret Spiegel Plus. Denn dieses Angebot vom Spiegel wird ein Jahr alt und ihr könnt euch jetzt ein Stück vom Kuchen sichern unter spiegel.de/Kuchen. Bekommt ihr Spiegel Plus 6 Monate für 10 Euro statt für 19,99 und könnt das Ganze monatlich kündigen. Was ist Spiegel Plus? Das sind die Nachrichtenimpulse Zeit, die ihr von Spiegel Online gewohnt seid, mit der tiefergehenden Recherche und den exklusiven Geschichten im Heft. Ihr wisst, dass der Spiegel eine unabhängige Gruppe ist, eigene Redaktion, exklusive Stücke, die nur für Spiegel Plus geschrieben werden. Also der Zugang zur kompletten digitalen Welt des Spiegel mit Sachen wie Ernährung, Finanzen, Familie, Stadtentwicklung und so weiter. Das Ganze unter spiegel.de/Kuchen, eben günstiger als sonst. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Rest der Folge.
Is there something like, I'm just thinking of in these EO groups, entrepreneurship groups, we have really tough training to understand how we are supposed to talk. So for example, one thing I always appreciated, when it started 10 years ago, we talk from our own experience because it's my experience, it's my side, I stay on my side, it's right. Very easy to do that. But I experience in the German corporate world, there's a thing we love to give feedback to other people.
Yeah, there's non-violent communications and then there's violent communications. Yeah.
I have some feedback for you.
Yes, that sentence. And then
and then you know when it starts, you're like, oh shit. Is there like a training that and how does it change people when they do that? I experience that as extremely powerful, this type of communication.
I think there's a lot of wisdom, and NVC is one of them. Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication is a good example. We've largely figured out what makes for better exchanges between people. But it's in a book somewhere, or it's a practice. And we don't, it's like diet and exercise. Yes, it's written down somewhere what we should do, but I'm busy and that's just not the way things are around here. There's a set of behaviors that are deeply entrenched and that's the way we do things here. Changing those behaviors, there's no substitute for practice over time. And the only way you're going to do that, or the way to increase the odds that you'll practice over time, is small steps, some kind of structure, peer support that gives you feedback and support along the way, some kind of guided mastery that helps you do it until it becomes habitual. So unfortunately, it's unlikely we're going to pass everybody through how to be a human training, right? How to communicate better training. So instead, what I rely on is we're actually pretty good judges of that. Like we're highly sophisticated for what's reasonable give and take. How would you react if I wrote this email, right? So even without formal training, in a circle, you're practicing. Okay. And I rely on that. That peer exchange within the group to help people develop and enhance their communication skills.
And even if it's, you said it's a trusted circle, so it's a group, what happens in the room stays in the room, and yeah. Like how are people acting with the pink elephant in the room? Sometimes in the corporate world you have this thing and the pink elephant is in the room and nobody wants to talk about it, but like, how do you experience that? Are they afraid? Are they open?
When we form circles, if there's a key ingredient, it's that they're diverse. because, you know, even if Max and I like each other, and we do, but maybe I feel like I should know more about this topic, and I would be less willing to display that I don't, right? So we're very highly attuned to status management in with people that we know well, even if we like each other. So certainly within a team or a division or my manager, and then it's not a psychologically safe space. It doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that I'm a little less likely to say what I mean, to experiment. So inside and outside companies, we encourage the formation of diverse groups. And what's somewhat ironic, I guess, is that even though you know you don't know these people, you're more likely to divulge things you wouldn't otherwise. And over the course of a circle, what I hear all the time is, we started as strangers and we ended as friends. Because the small give and take over time builds trust and a sense of relatedness.
Actually, from firsthand experience with you, I you know, one really practical starting point for a circle could be an offsite, like, you know, in top management, you have a large corporate inviting 50, 60, 100, 200, 600. I mean, these offsites where all these people come together and a circle could start helping them because the offsite is gone.
Yeah.
It finishes up, closing remarks, and then, you know, you're back to your job, and then a circle could help you like a week or 2 weeks later to, you know, yeah, to find new friends and to basically, in the spirit of the offsite, in the spirit of, for instance, a change program, to implement it in daily life. So that could be a great starting point.
That's right. I mean, the offsites are great. Having management support is great. And yet, as soon as you go back to your desk, you have all of the same triggers in the environment that you had before and all of the same habits. So this, you could think of this as a circle of working out loud as a behavioral change component to whatever it is you're already doing. You have a digital transformation program or culture change. Those are good. They raise awareness. They signal to you that that this is right in our company, this is safe to do. But to actually do it, you need something after the event. And this gives you a way that's quite scalable because these little groups of five can form and spread.
What would a typical corporate project look like that you actually lead when a client says, hey, we want to work with you, we want to do something?
What I advocate is that they start on their own with an experiment first. So when it tends not to work if they try to turn Working Out Loud into a program from the beginning. It works best when it feels like an employee-led movement. Whether it's Bosch or Daimler or Siemens or BMW, all of them, or today Deutsche Bahn, UniCredit, you know, pick your place. These are people that just read about it, started it, told their friends, and now they've got a few hundred people. That makes it easy for someone in the organization, in HR typically, who says, huh, people seem to like this. This seems consistent with what we want for both employee development, but also for behaviors across employees. What could we do? Well, at Bosch or Daimler, then they'll plug it into the onboarding program. And that's where they may ask for help. Help to train internal trainers who can support and spread it. Help to customize materials, so it refers to company examples. Help to integrate it into programs, that kind of thing. But it doesn't need that to start. And in fact, some companies, Continental is a good one, where they're not clients. They just use the material and made it their own and spread it. Great. Great. Because like a lot of the great initiatives now, it's a freemium thing. You reach a lot of people. You help a lot of people. And then for those that might need some extra value or services, they can buy them. But that's not a barrier. That's an enabler or enhancer.
How did it change the life of John from like the early days to today? I mean, you went through a transition for yourself. You said, well, I had a corporate job before. You said you're in your 50s now, and it feels like you're running a startup and a movement. Let's say you're you're leading a movement and you like let it out in the world and a lot of people use it. And it's extremely impressive to see that something that is needed so desperately by people, but still, I would say there are enough people out there being afraid to open up like that, still works in the corporate world. I don't have an example where something is worked that intense, like here.
On a given day, I will feel great because I'll get some note from a stranger who's used what I've done to make their life better in some way. And boy, that's great. And then 30 seconds later, I will realize that I have no idea what to do next. And that happens throughout the day. And we were talking earlier about, you know, I have a lot of kind of sympathy for my former self of why I stayed in these big companies. Big companies are not bad, by the way. Not at all. They have a rich set of resources and opportunities. What's bad was that I felt less than I was. Like, I felt diminished when I went into the office. And I wore a mask of professionalism, and I fit in, and I was constantly aware of my position and trying to maintain, etc. Like fear and loathing in the big company. It does not have to be that way. And so what I experienced at the end of Deutsche Bank was that it was actually much nicer. And my everyday was much nicer. So what's changed for me is it's not just, oh, I escaped the big company. That's not it at all, actually. What I experienced was, oh, I met the best of this place. And Deutsche Bank has had some tough times. But even then, I met the best of them around the world. And I, in my late 40s and 50s, was able to develop a new career at the company in a way that was good for me and them. So that led me to say, you know, back to self-determination theory, yeah, I have more choice than I thought. I have more ability than I thought. And it's scary because I have to embrace uncertainty like you're doing with this podcast and your business or you're doing. But I'll make that trade any day, that I will try something either in the workplace or outside that might be a little bit uncomfortable, but if I do it in such a way that it feels like I'm contributing and it's leading to human connections with other people, that makes it easier. And that's what I find for other people, is that please don't quit your job. But do try something that can make you a bit more open, that can tap into some intrinsic motivation, that can make you feel like you have more to offer, and then see where that takes you.
So someone listening, working for a big corporate and now, you know, all intrigued to start a circle, what would be your advice? What are some lessons learned you can give from firsthand experience?
I think for most people, they just approach it with an open mind. Like, this is, do not join to change your life. Do not join to change your job. Those things might happen. But treat it as, you know, there's something new. I'm going to give it a shot, right? I'm going to try something a little bit different.
So realistic goals,
goals. What's something that you are trying to learn more about, or something that you'd like to explore, or kinds of people that you would like to know more of? So I know HR people listen to your podcast. Their goal could be as simple as, gee, you know, there's a lot happening in HR. I'd like to know more about some innovative techniques. Or meet people who are doing interesting HR work, right? Well, how would you do that? Well, here's a way to do that. This is your job. This is work. And here's a vehicle for you to do that that also helps you learn about peer-based social learning at the same time. So you get multiple things. You treat it as an experiment. You try it. And then after you've gone through a circle yourself,
so real quick, that was the goal setting. Then we have the circle. So any advice on
how to form one?
Yeah, ideal. You already mentioned diversity. Is it, for instance, of advantage to be physically more present or with the help of Skype, etc.? It doesn't matter. So any advice on the?
It You have a choice. I'd say more than half the circles are virtual by video. And it's up to you. So for you, you may say, no, I'd like to meet in the canteen with four other people. I posted on the internet. Anyone interested in the Working Out Loud circle, I found a few people. We go. Right? Simple as that. You might just send an email to a few friends. Hey, I'm trying this thing. What do you think? You could start that way. For others, depending on them and their goal, that might not be a safe space. Maybe they want people outside the company. So they may, on a LinkedIn group for Working Out Loud or Facebook group, they'll post it there. Think about experimenting with a circle. Who would join me? And very quickly, they'll find a few other people from other companies or countries who will join them. So practically, in person or via video, they both work very well. They're different. And it's up to you what would feel more kind of natural or comfortable that you would start. And start there. At Bosch, what Katarina Krentz told me recently was 75% of the people who join a circle tend to join a second one. And she said she could see a pattern. The first one is in their mother tongue, in person. The second one is across locations. And the third one is across company. And she said you could almost see people opening up, right? Like, oh, let's just talk in German at the canteen. Oh, let's have a few people from other places because it's kind of cool. Somebody in Sao Paulo. That would be immediately interesting, right? And then third would be, hey, what else is out there?
Mm. A Bosch with a Daimler and
that's right.
So ZF and
that's cool. So that's cool.
So Bosch, as evidence of that, I guess, so Bosch and Daimler, they would host events for Working Out Loud. But then they said, "Oh, we're both doing this. Let's do an event together." And they did a Working Out Loud conference in Fellbach, and they had 400 people. They had the head of the Works Council and the head of HR from different companies together, and they were encouraging their people to like. Please get out there and see what's happening. Like, don't just stay in your box. Please don't do that. Another company in Darmstadt, they're going to host an event with two other companies, and they will purposefully form circles across companies. They're not competitors. They're not sharing secret sauces. But they want people to realize, like, not only do we want you to get out of your silo in your team or division, We want you to see this is a big world. There's a lot of change happening. And the more that you can surf that, the more that whatever you're trying to do, you can find people and content related to it. That's a superpower, right? In the 21st century, please have that. That's good for you and your career, and it's good for the company.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm just like going through all the stuff we experienced so far, and I'm thinking of the podcast we did with Fridtjof Bergman, the inventor of the term new work. Mm. And he came up with the idea of centers for new work and like how to help people to find out what they really, really want, which is quite often not connected to the company. Or like this, I put it black and white now. And these days I have a feeling that there are many people thinking of, oh, I got to be an entrepreneur to be free and to work where I want and all this stuff. And what I liked about your personal story is when you realized I can do something within my organization, because what I'm missing is something else than going out there and becoming an entrepreneur, which is not the best idea sometimes.
as an entrepreneur, I can say, yeah, that is not the place to start.
Yeah, but that's what I love about that method. I mean, it opens up. I told you I usually come very blank to a podcast, and of course I had an idea and all that stuff, but I'm just realizing there's something powerful, very powerful here, using as a vehicle to like find something out that helps the corporation, because people most likely like to work there afterwards, right. And much more than before. And at the same time, being like self-determined, but also self-conscious about, okay, what do I do here, and have a look on that. And I mean, that's the difference between the human and the animal. Like we can actually overlook what we do and make a decision. This is big. My goodness.
And I can really just to tap on that real quick, because I can honestly say from experience, and I'm not paid by John. Actually, we met at the client together. So I ran into Working Out Loud exactly because of people in the organization were raving about it. So it was not like someone told us like, oh, you should do this. Or someone said like, oh, you should read the book and try it out. it was like that we listened to, you know, people within the organization, listening to them what really helped them in the change process. And after hearing it the fifth, the sixth, the seventh time, oh, working out loud works great. Hearing it again at different companies, you know, we started to look into it like, what is that? And the way the people describe it, it really brought them change. So they, you know, they're not talking about it like, ah, it's okay. It really feels like it's something tangible. It, like, you know exactly who I mean from ZF Friedrichshafen. Mm. I mean, she's raving about it because she says it really helped her. It helped her surroundings. It helped the organization with this grassroots thing to work on change stuff.
And she's still in the same company, exactly, in the same city. But what she has, Julia Weber, who's fantastic, what she has developed is the confidence that I, Julia, have something to contribute. I can reach out to people across cities and companies to get my job done. So she's much better at her job. She has much more potential to contribute to her company and still feels like, well, I have, you know, it's not just about the company budget or deadline or performance review. Like, I'm determining this, but in a way that contributes to the outcomes of the company. So it is a nice balance. I do want to say this is not new. Like, these topics of human exchange or rehumanizing work, or, yeah, we get it, right? But we've heard this. Thanks very much. If there's something that's a little bit different, it's that we're able to carve out this psychologically safe space so that people could experience themselves over time till it becomes a habit. That's it. That's new. So like I said, there are great other initiatives at work. There's mindfulness at work. But they tend to feel like outside of the day-to-day. And what this does is says, no, this is actually part of your job, part of your work experience. And you can weave it into what you're already doing. And that makes it much more likely that you'll practice, that you'll do it until it becomes a set of habits, that you'll keep practicing. And that's why I'm optimistic that not only can the change spread, but it can be sustainable.
And it doesn't need to be something new. I mean, when I meet people, sometimes they say, oh, tell us something new. Right? I'm like, why should I? I mean, you don't do this stuff like I told you last time.
And that ends the conversation.
And then, yeah, well, my people tend to tell me I need to be more polite. I believe I'm clear. That sometimes seems a bit hard, but anyways, like, saying we need something new is to me like, oh, I need to consume something new. Where's the new headline? Oh, there is a news. There's something. And then we'd like get distracted. Instead of looking into that, what I'm fascinated about is that it works like grassroots, and that's a big thing. So there needs to be something, as you asked, Max, the secret sauce. I mean, needs to be something in the mechanic that made it work, something we already know. Like, I mean, people meditate, and we talked about Japan and where it comes from and so on, and it's quite tough to respect that. Headspace as an app made a big change to people
meditating. I was just
thinking
that. That's 2,500 years old, right?
Yeah.
So there's plenty of books, but somehow reading books isn't enough.
Yeah.
And these people, and they're not alone, they're not the only ones, but someone's come up with a way to help people put this wisdom into practice. Great. Did they convince everybody? No. Did they help a few million people? Yes. And that's how I look at it, is I take wisdom that's supported by science about what would make for a better way to work, and I packaged it in such a way that it's easier for you to practice over time until it becomes a habit. And so we could be maybe the headspace for relationships, right? Or for cooperation and collaboration, how we relate to each other, and then by extension, how we relate to ourselves and the work we do.
And the old way would have been, I develop a method and I sell it as a consultancy to corporations, but you put it out there and you let people work with it. When was the moment when you realized you put it out there and you're like, oh shit, there's something, like, it's kind of taking off, or there's something happening that I I'm not controlling anymore?
I think I have that moment kind of every day, because there's no hockey stick like you see in the startup world, like unicorns. You just don't have that. It's not fueled that way. It's much more gradual. And so every day I think, wow, here's another company I never heard of in a faraway place that some people just translated the guides into Turkish because they wanted to help people who speak Turkish to feel the way they feel. So at that moment, I think, wow, this is really spreading. But in the next moment, I'm like, but maybe that's it. Maybe it won't go. So I guess my point is, every day I work on, and I feel this is my job now, how do I continue to innovate so we can reach more people where they are? So on this trip, we'll be in a factory setting, we'll be in a talent management group at a big company, we'll be training a kind of masterclass. What are things I can do to make it ever easier for you to practice wherever you are? And that's become my job. Yes, I also have to figure out how to earn a living, but that'll be a hell of a lot easier to do when people are already using the thing than to try to get someone's attention beforehand.
I have to look. I put the podcast device away to like be fully focused. Oh my goodness, we're running close to an hour. It's like 50 minutes, and I'm always the timekeeper to have a look. And it feels like we're at the beginning of the conversation. By doing that, one question we always have is like, where do you get your inspiration from? Like, where, what's your source to like refuel and then develop your own ideas?
I try to tap into a range of wisdom. So I said I try to package it in such a way that people could practice. But what's the wisdom? Well, the wisdom comes from behavioral psychology. Like, why do we do what we do? Right? To Buddhism. I was raised Catholic. I don't know if I'm allowed to. Do you call yourself a Buddhist? I feel that. I mean, we're all wearing the beads here.
We all have different ones here.
But that philosophy, in particular, mindfulness, right? This I am aware. I don't just react. I do things. Whether it's I communicate with you, whether I'm doing an experiment, I'm trying to discover something. Whatever it is, I'm doing it in a mindful way. That's certainly an influence on me, because that helps you act with clarity and confidence. And also neuroscience. Like, how are we wired? Like, there are just, if we, the last 20, 30 years, we've learned so much about how we work, that if you can leverage that, and in a sense, go with that, go with what's natural for human beings to do, you make it easier for people to practice. It feels natural. So I'd say those are my big three: behavioral psychology, neuroscience, and also mindfulness. That allows you to experiment and explore, but perhaps with a little less striving and more curiosity.
Do you read?
I'm a very boring guy. Yeah, so books are my thing. In fact, my wife's like, no more books. We live in Manhattan. There's no place to put them.
But I think if I see it right, you're traveling because that's your book.
You're traveling with seven books.
Oh, I know. Please, this is environmentally
incorrect.
Have you
read about the Amazon Kindle?
Yes.
Do you know that device?
You know, sometimes...
It's seven books you're carrying from New York to Berlin.
This is a commitment.
These books, one is about the combination of neuroscience and mindfulness. One is about, I've got a couple of books on factory work, on lean manufacturing. So if I'm going to work with that environment, lean manufacturing is fantastic, right, in terms of efficiency, but we squeezed the human being out of it, probably in the last 10, 15 years. The original quality movement was employee-led. Like, I have a way to make work better. But we kind of lost that part and focused more on cost-cutting and waste reduction. which is good up to a point. So if I can leverage some of that wisdom, but rehumanize it, then everybody wins, including the people that work there. So the, yes, lots of books, lots of podcasts. Now I've got a new fantastic podcast to listen to.
I always wanted to talk to Intermichael that we make it in English so that we can become more international, but that's a hard one, a hard discussion. Fantastic. So I would love to...
Yeah. I could talk to you all day.
Same here, but I think there are two things. I have to catch a plane, which will leave at a certain point. But how about that? Why don't we do a part two in New York City? Because Max and I have an idea for a guest in New York City anyway, so we have to go there. And
that would be lovely. I could show you my hometown.
Exactly. Yeah. And we do a walk through New York City and record a podcast while we walk.
Oh, great.
And go a bit more in these things in the books when it comes to mindfulness and also Buddhism. I'm very interested in that as well.
That'd be my pleasure.
So that's the idea.
Thank you very much.
Anything from your side, Max, what you said?
No, absolutely. Just thank you very much, John, for being so generous with your time and all good. And I think, you know, for everyone listening out there and getting intrigued, you mentioned the material is out there.
Yeah, workingoutloud.com. It's on the website. It's
also your Instagram name. And
right.
And what I, you know, what I really like is like, because, you know, meditation, mindfulness, working out loud. So putting practice into a habit and finding the time for like an hour a week, have it scheduled in the calendar. I mean,
2% of your time. I think it's the best investment you could make in yourself.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
What a pleasure.